Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. It's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Vas Larikos. Vas, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Great to see you. Our Ravens back out at camp, putting the pads on. Always look forward to chopping it up and talking ball with you from this GM perspective on this series that we do every week.
It's a great deal of fun. This conversation is one of the ones I really look forward to every week. And as you mentioned, really looking forward to the pads coming on tomorrow. We do this on Thursday, so it's today when you're listening, we hope, that the pads will be out on Friday, and I hope you'll look for the notes afterwards and whatnot, because it is definitely one of those telling practices, that first padded practice of the camp.
For sure.
All right. Well, Ravens had a couple of big roster moves since we last did our pod. Now, there's been some information on those, of course, out there. But the first was the signing of Eddie Jackson, a guy I know you liked as a free safety candidate, a split field safety candidate. Talk about him a little bit.
Absolutely. I've liked Eddie Jackson since he was coming out of Alabama way back when. He put together he was probably one of the top free safeties in the league for the first few years of his career. And that mantle kind of became passed to Jesse Bates and Kevin Byard in recent years, and Marcus Williams as well. I really think his skill set is a perfect fit for what the Ravens want to do as far as the range and the takeaway or the ball hawking potential there.
Yeah, definitely has a lot of great second man of the ball skills. And obviously, I pick on some elements of Eddie Jackson, which I think are problems, but they're also the reason they got him cheap. And one of the reasons why the Ravens may have a gem here is that they're going to craft a role for him that's less than it was in Chicago. So let's talk about that briefly. He's 31 in December, 10.0 yards per target over the last four seasons. So 998 yards actually in 100 targets exactly if you look at the PFF numbers. does matter, by the way, whose targets you use. PFF does not assign most targets to the safety that are between levels 2 and 3. So a lot of play action passes, what a lot of very successful concepts are run between levels 2 and 3. PFF typically will assign that target to a linebacker the ball goes over as opposed to the safety it's in front of. So that's very important. And if you look at PFR, they have a different total. I forget if it was 144 or 151 targets, but it's much higher for Jackson for the last 4 years. And the yards per target, not any better. They're 10.44 yards per target, in fact, over that period. So either way you look at it, it's a fair number of balls, you know, in there. One of the things about that is the Bears asked him to do an awful lot. They asked him to play a lot of single high. They asked him to play basically like a free safety, as two things were happening. First of all, he's probably declining a little bit in terms of skills and speed with age. But second of all, he had some injuries as well.
Sure. And another important note, that Chicago Bears defense was not very good. It wasn't a system that would elevate the players. As we saw with Roquan Smith, I've heard you make note of this, and I was going to make the same exact point. You come to Baltimore, you're put in a role where you can now thrive. And I do expect, as the third safety, Eddie Jackson to thrive. Another just quick note, he has extreme familiarity with the personnel already on the roster. Obviously played with Roquan for many years, played in college with Marlon and with Derrick Henry, and is familiar with Lamar and Zay Flowers from growing up in South Florida. So I think it's going to be a hand in a glove type of fit. I'm very optimistic about this one.
I'm optimistic too. I'm hopeful anyway. And I think the other reason I'm optimistic is because, you know, basically I look at it as going from a single high role being you're covering maybe 60% of the field or maybe 2/3 of the field, even is the expectation. Requires outstanding instincts, sideline to sideline, judgment, even more than speed. And I think that if in a split field role where he's truly responsible for half the field and then doing other things to rotating coverage, I think that suits him a lot better in terms of what his characteristics are. I also think he'll be able to rely in the same way that the safeties covered for the weaknesses of the corners last year for the Ravens. I thought the Ravens cornerback group was fairly average, maybe even below average, but they had outstanding over the top safeties that really constrained the area those corners had to work in. That was extremely good. And I think that the tackling up front will be good enough to hopefully not expose what has been a weakness for him over his entire career, a 14.5% missed tackle rate. That would actually, if I post that into the 2023 season, it would be in the 32nd percentile of all safeties, meaning it's a below average tackle rate.
Bottom
third. But it's actually a little worse than that because he accumulated that over his whole career, and PFF's definition has gotten tougher. And so the fact that his rate is at 14.5%, it probably it would fit lower over the 7 year like weighted average of safeties for that period, maybe 26th, 27th percentile. So anyway, just so you have that.
Fair concern. And I think you're willing to accept maybe not the surest tackling in exchange for more turnover interception production, as the Ravens did last year with Geno.
Exactly. And it certainly was not a strength there before. So it's not like the Ravens are going down before that. Funny, Geno Stone had a remarkably weird year. He made his first some large number of tackles. I want to say it was about 21 tackles without a miss. And then he had a terrible year thereafter, missing a whole bunch of tackles. And that was a shame.
It was odd. And the previous year, he was a very short tackler filling the alley. And all of a sudden it went downhill. But that happens sometimes when players are exposed to more playing time, I guess. Overall, I'm very excited about this one. I think this, coupled with the next one we're going to talk about, Worley, I think Eric DaCosta has learned a valuable lesson from the mistake that he made in 2022 of relying on young players to fill important roles, particularly at wide receiver. They traded away Hollywood. They had Bateman. They brought in DeMarcus Robinson, and they were relying on Tylan Wallace and James Prochet. Last year, there were people that were big fans of Jalen Armour Davis, didn't see the need for a corner. He went out and got Darby anyway. There were fans of Ojabo. He went out and got Clowney anyway. This year, there were fans of Ardarius Washington, and he went out and really solidified this position group. I couldn't be more pleased with the difference a week makes.
Yeah, it really was. And we're going to get to the second transaction in a second. I just Eddie Jackson signed for slightly over the vet min, about $1.5 million with $750,000 of that guaranteed. The significance of that is he's not a handshake player. So he's not a guy you can cut and then return. He's got $750,000 in guaranteed money. So he's guaranteed a spot. But I think also just from watching him the first couple of days of camp, including a pick six he had on his second day in camp, he's looked exceptionally good. And I don't see any reason why they would take a chance on cutting a potentially very important player who might play, you know, 60% of the snaps or something for the Ravens this year if it's similar to Geno last year.
Yeah, I think that's tremendous value on the deal. You know, sometimes players of this caliber you can get for $3 million, $4 million, somewhere around there. I think this is a bargain. He was making significantly more pretty much every season of his career until now.
Really, the safety market, I think, really played into the Ravens' hands. There's still some big-name safeties out there. Simmons, right. Justin Simmons is still not signed. He's another guy who has his negatives, and maybe somebody gets him really cheap. My guess is he probably $3-4 million might be the range he ends up signing for. But the DaCosta did a really good job of understanding what the market was. Let's move on to the second guy, because I'm very excited about this reacquisition of Daryl Worley. He just turned 29 in February, so he's not all the way gone in terms of being around, but, you know, coming back from a serious pec injury in 2023 that ended his season early after he played very well in limited playing time, you know, made all 9 tackles, 3.5 yards per target, 21 yards and 6 targets is not a whole lot to go on, but it's all a great result to start from.
Sure. Yeah, a successful transition from corner to safety. We talk about that a lot. This is the model. Could not be happier with his ability on the back end, as far as the range and the coverage, as well as a very short tackler and a core special teamer. So we've been talking about him all summer, it seems, and they finally came to terms. So thrilled.
Now, one of the things that these two acquisitions do is really put aside any notion that Marlon Humphrey will move to safety this year. But I did get a chance to ask him about that in camp and just say, you know, is this something that you and the coaches have had discussions about happening at some point in your career? And he says, no, those discussions haven't happened yet, but it's something I always saw myself doing, is moving to safety. I thought he had a very self-effacing, very honest response about the thing. I almost didn't seem like he would object to it if it came sooner rather than later. And you never know. It might be required at some point. I would certainly hope not because of his play at corner, but maybe due to an injury. I mean, if Marcus Williams were to get hurt, you might really want Marlon Humphrey on the back end this year. So, you know, there are reasons why it would happen. And I do think that I'd like to hear your take on this as well, that Humphrey probably is more likely to slide into that split field role if the Ravens continue to play the same system, rather than moving directly to free safety. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him being a free safety at some point either.
I could see that, you know, Rod Woodson comparison. Mm-hmm. Rod Woodson, he's had probably a pretty similar career. He has pretty similar skill set. I think Marlon, there was talk many, you know, years ago, Jimmy Smith can move to safety. I wasn't quite so sure that he had the range or the tackling or the instincts or the cerebral way that Marlon sees the field. But I do think Marlon would make a very fine safety when the time comes.
A cover three guy. And, you know, Marcus Peters was that guy also in terms of being a guy who saw the field very well from the back end, being a guy who would move up and make a play on not his man. Now, not everybody can do that. That's not a cornerbacks. They kind of like playing on an island and they want to stay with their man. Marlon doesn't have a problem abandoning his man when he knows the quarterback isn't going there due to pressure or circumstance or whatever it might be. And he's made some of his finest plays doing just that, being off man plays. But anyway, I do think he kind of would be a natural there, and it'd be kind of cool to see him there. But either way, these two acquisitions now solidify the opportunity. And by the way, they're talking about that all around, that Hamilton will be able to continue to play the slot corner role and give the Ravens what he did last year, which was just, that was DPOY level play.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And I was concerned that if Hamilton was on the back end, he would not make as much of an impact. Interesting quote from John Harbaugh a few days ago when asked about the, you know, the talent in the secondary. And that's really probably been the storyline of training camp so far. I would say just by reading the press clippings, I think it's the best secondary in the NFL. You add a first round corner with great speed. Marlon's back healthy. You have Stevens. You have probably the best starting safety tandem. And now you have maybe the best starting backup safety tandem. Not only does it allow Kyle Hamilton to resume the role as the big nickel, Harbaugh had a quote about Hamilton being a dime linebacker when the time calls for it. You have Hamilton as your dime backer and Marlon as your slot corner with Wiggins and Stevens on the outside. That is a playmaking, opportunistic. It just really gets me excited. And you can absorb, you could probably absorb an injury at either corner or safety. And
or inside linebacker.
And slide in Mollett or Darius Washington as their slot. I could not be, as a person that loves secondary play and corner's probably his favorite position and Ed Reed's his favorite player, I am very excited to see how the secondary performs.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about that in terms of the dime. And that question has come up, I believe, twice. So Jonas Schaefer asked it of Harbaugh, and I think that's the quote you're referring to. Yesterday, I asked it of Zach Orr. And I said, you know, is there a place for the dime in this defense? And I was really referring to, you know, what he came up in a system, obviously, where he was a three down will linebacker. That basically creates a committed nickel defense. I know most of the people listening to this show probably know that. But when you keep both linebackers on the field, there's really no more place for the dime unless you're going to go to a really specialized version of the dime known as the 32 dime, where the Ravens did play that in 2001. But I really don't expect them to go back to something like that. I think Harbaugh in particular really seems to like having a four-man front for pass rush situations. So I think they'll stick with that, which means the 41 dime is what they would probably use. So it gives you the flexibility under two circumstances. One is Trenton Simpson doesn't work out, not as well as they did, not the coverage player he is on third down. If he becomes Patrick Queen as a rookie in his second year and they don't see him, you know, stepping up to be a better coverage player, Hamilton might be a very reasonable choice in that spot. So might Worley, by the way. So might Darryl Worley as far as that. And then the other possibility is that you have an injury. And you know, the nuclear option is you get an injury to Roquan, and you have to create a split Mike role where Simpson remains an every down player, but on third down, he moves over to play Mike after Harrison plays two down, say. Sure. And then on third down, you bring in a dime back to play next to Simpson. I think you have a lot of ways which you're more insulated from injury at inside linebacker based on these acquisitions.
Definitely agree there. We used to say they scheme it front to back. They build it back to front. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly what they've done. DaCosta has done with these two acquisitions. In addition to all the other secondary acquisitions through the draft and otherwise this offseason, secondary play is, especially when you're facing a conference with this caliber of quarterbacks, it's a great place to be.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so Worley, also a vet man and handshake guy. Trey Swilling was cut to make room for him. Before that, Jordan Toles was cut to make room, and he's the Morgan State guy, to make room for Eddie Jackson.
Little surprised by those two, to be honest. I mean, I guess they have a certain number of safeties they want to have and a certain number of linebackers and D-linemen, et cetera. But I thought those two players maybe had some long-term potential above some other players that did keep around, but we'll trust your judgment there.
So Bo Braid and Sunusi Kane would have been the other options to really cut. Would you've cut one of those, I'm taking.
I would say maybe you thin out some of the last man of on the defensive line potentially, or somewhere else. I mean, they have extra bodies other places. Swilling with maybe some crossover versatility had some intrigue to me. But, you know, they're out there. They know what's in these players' minds and how hard they practice and all that. So we won't judge them for that.
We heard a little bit last year in the interview with Jeremy Lucien that Swilling had been a practice squad player of the week. They really loved him. So it's interesting that they didn't get him. They let him go. Maybe he's back at some point this season. Anyway, he's definitely a guy I think is on speed dial for the Ravens.
Yeah.
If they're not writing him a letter of recommendation to go somewhere else.
Certainly.
Well, let's talk about you kind of mentioned some of the things that are happening at camp. There's been really dominant defense in the first 4 days of camp. It's been a mess, frankly, for the offense. A lot of that is the fact that Lamar Jackson's only thrown five passes so far. Right. But, you know, I think if I had to say, I'd say 45% of it is just that. And another 55% is the fact that the defense is just playing fast and playing incredibly well. And it gives you a good feeling. It almost looks like some of the Flacco offenses in the mid-teens just trying to kind of feel their way through camp in the early parts of it, and having these overwhelming defenses just run them off the field, and Terrell Suggs leading the charge and you know, offering no quarter to the offense in terms of what they would do.
Well, certainly enjoyed your camp notes, daily camp notes so far, really keeping everybody up to date on the goings and the comings. It seems to me throughout the history of not only the Ravens, because the Ravens are probably more of a defensive franchise, but other teams, college football, the defense almost always starts out faster than the offense in preseason, in camp, and when they're practicing. But wanted to pick your brain a little bit, if I could. Pass rush, potential concern without Jadeveon Clowney. What should we expect based on what you've seen so far?
So have not seen a whole lot from Justin Madubuike, and the interior guys have been quieter than the edge guys, but the guy who's been an absolute demon, Adafi Owe, just been he's unstoppable right now. And I noticed him getting stopped. He's already pulling out the spin move. Now this is without pads. You know, he's using the spin move on his opponent, and it was probably Ronnie Stanley, because they're on both usually at the same time, one versus one. And you know, he's not offering Stanley any breaks on things. He has been in the backfield. He's been creating you know, compression pressure. He's had a couple of sacks that haven't been whistle dead. That's been an ongoing thing. The other guy on the outside who's really looked good, Kyle Van Noy's looked pretty good. I'd say he's had several pressures. The other guy's looked terrific is Malik Ham. He's all over the place. So I know you like Malik. And
I planted my flag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any Tavius Robinson starting to work on some pass rush, or still more of an edge setter at this point?
I mean, he's in there. He's getting his chance to do some. One of the problems with Tavius is I don't think he's always been on the number one field. So they've had this weird situation where they've been splitting the fields into two 11 on 11s, which creates a lot of reps. But when you only have three quarterbacks who are really ready to go, those guys have to move around a lot, and everybody gets to play a lot more. It's just the problem is, as a reporter, I only get to look at one field.
Sure.
And so I was looking at the number one field for almost all the time, and I looked at the number two field for a red zone drill on Thursday, but the I'm sorry, on Wednesday. I've gotten to see very little of, for example, Tez Walker so far, because he's been on the number two field.
Sure. I can certainly relate to that. A few years ago when I was out there with the press pass, Kyle Barber and I used to split, and he'd take one field and I'd take one field, and we compare notes at the end so we could both know what was going on. Tremendous to hear OA. You know, you always get a little bit, is it that OA's doing great, or is it that Ronnie and the right tackle is not performing up to, but you know, that's kind of how it always is in training camp. Secondary, on the other hand, I think you have to say has been a tremendous strength. I saw the highlight. And there's been some overthrow interceptions, which aren't totally impressive. Jalen Armour Davis snatched the ball out of the air in tight coverage. I thought that was very impressive.
Yeah, so it's there have been a lot of impressive hands by the secondary period. They've been really good off the tip. Marlon Humphrey tipped a ball to himself. He had another interception on an overthrow that, you're right, it's probably a slightly less impressive interception. It was just a direct catch. Hamilton was just in exactly the right place in a zone defense interception on 7-on-7. First of all, I can't even tell you how bad that is to throw an interception like that when you're the quarterback, because there's nobody around Hamilton. Hamilton's in zone. He passed off his man. He's an underneath guy. I don't know what he was waiting for in terms of his next coverage, even, because I wasn't watching his play on that. But the ball was thrown for a man over him, and Hamilton just you know, used his size, picked it right out of the air, and it was as easy as hell interception. So it's been a variety of things. Marcus Williams has shown good hands. We saw two interceptions from Trayvon Mullen, one of them with terrific hands yesterday. So it's been very balanced and all across the secondary. But the only guy who hasn't gotten in the action so far that's really a guy who's on the edge, or the couple guys are Darius Washington and Pepe Williams. Neither of them have had an interception yet, but they've looked okay. And Ardarius has got some time mixed around at a couple different positions. I can't go into that too deep based on the rules, right. but he's been used in a couple different spots. And I think the secondaries look great.
It seems Ardarius and Pepe are probably competing for the same job. I personally would give the nod to Ardarius with Pepe coming up. There's just so many. I mean, they have five guys that can all excel in the slot, essentially. So who would you give the nod to?
Yeah, Ardarius would be my guy as well. I think, you know, he's probably also proven he can get them through a game at safety if they need to. I think the two acquisitions this week are a clear vote of no confidence in a certain way in Ardarius. I think, you know, Ryan Mink wrote a very
glowing
article of Ardarius's play in the second. I'm not seeing the same thing. And just in terms of fit, I didn't think he's exactly the right guy in terms of size, certainly to handle the tackling responsibilities. But I think he is the kind of guy maybe gets you through a game if you need to do that. Otherwise, can play a fine slot corner. And, you know, we've seen him do some wonderful things off the edge, very similar to Mollett last year in that regard. I think Ardarius probably gives you a little more in terms of coverage chops underneath and in terms of good change of direction play there as well.
Sure, I would agree with that.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
On to the probably the storyline of the preseason. A lot of people are up in arms about the offensive line situation. I'm not as concerned, but who better to ask than the offensive line guru? I know we can't talk about who's running with the ones and who's running with the twos. They don't permit that, but who's looked good and who's struggled?
Sure. So the guy who struggled probably more than anybody else is Josh Jones right now. And he's run three separate laps for false starts. That's one of the big things is they run laps. So he's got one. Voorhees has got one. Cleveland has got one. Somebody else had one too, but I'm forgetting who it was. But anyway, Josh Jones has been the big loser with three. He's played a little bit, played several different positions as more or less a backup, I would say. He's not really in there, I don't think. In the mix for a starting role as I see it currently. It could always change. Remember, this time last year, we had Sala running with right. The ones, and so things changed. We've got a different sort of a situation that might be similar this year that seems to be occurring, and things might change again. Daniel Fa'alele has gotten a lot of playing time so far, so we'll see if that really holds up. Ben Cleveland, again, is kind of struggling to get snaps. And so we'll see how that rolls out the rest of the way. He's getting some, but he's just getting less than I would have probably expected.
It just seems that he's not a practice player. He's a gamer. It seems from the last three, 4 years, or I guess 3.5 years of covering Cleveland. I don't know. Have they done any one-on-ones? Have they done one-on-one pass pro?
No, they have not done that yet.
That's usually a joint practice.
Yes.
If I recall,
they do it. It is a big deal when they do it, and they do it with the running backs versus the linebackers. And it's, I'll tell you why, you know, it's a big deal because they have a handshake line after it to become friends again. So it's a violent confrontational thing. And it will happen probably on Friday, some of that because they'll be in pads for the first time. So that I'll look forward to that. And I'll try and make sure I've got my antenna up so I don't miss it. That's the kind of thing. If it's in the middle of the field, and that's what they did last time. I wasn't just in a great position to watch it. I did happen to notice it, and I made some notes, but it could be one of those things you miss on.
Sure. Well, I think we're all anxious to see Lamar on the field, taking his vitamin C and magnesium and zinc and try to get this passing offense and rhythm, because that seems to be maybe the biggest problem. Any other notes you want to share while we're
maybe talk about Lamar for just a second? Is he really did look good on his initial throws. So it come out, and each quarterback had three throws in 11 versus colors, I'll call it, where they just have the equipment guys wearing colored jerseys. Yes,
right. Yeah.
He made three really nice throws, including a great on the money seam throw to Andrews that caught him in stride. It was perfect, and that's what you're looking for in those passes. Yeah. You're looking for the receiver not to have to slow down to catch the ball, because the defense is offering, those 11 guys are offering no attempt to disrupt or knock down a pass. They're just trying to show a certain coverage and let the guys run right by them. So anyway, he looked great in that, and then he got on the field in those first five passes and looked terrible. He overthrew on the left side of the end zone, and he threw an interception to Humphrey, and he threw a ball that was behind Justice Hill on a little swing pass that was bobbled and dropped, had a completed swing pass. I'm trying to remember the fifth pass, but and then he did not have another snap at quarterback, have another pass thrown the rest of the day for reasons that I can't get into for rules. I did notice, by the way, the Baltimore Sun reported exactly what happened. I don't know why they're allowed to do that, but I did notice it. So if you want to read Brian Wacker's column in the Sun today, yeah, or I could quote Brian and say, well, Brian said that.
There you go. Game the system. I've seen a little more loose lips. Where is Falele lining up, et cetera. But I guess Chad Steele's not cracking the whip yet. So where were we going with that?
Practices.
Rashad Bateman, I would say, he's also getting a lot of positive press. Apparently had some highlight catches in the rain. I hope that continues when Lamar rejoins the field and strong passes to him. I would probably subtract 10% of Lamar's chemistry with Mark Andrews and apply that to Rashad Bateman. The team would be better off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, if you could, maybe even more, because his chemistry with Andrews is off the charts. Just having some go to those timing routes on that left side would be really nice. Anyway, he's had a few good plays. He's looked athletic. He looks in great shape. He looks like he's running better than he probably has in the past, with some of the injuries he's had and working through Liz Frank and, you know, being what that is. I would say he's not had a whole lot of opportunities to look great with the quarterbacks that have been thrown to him so far. And balls have been off target. And even Lamar, I mean, he overthrew him on the one pass that was intercepted by Humphrey. So it's been tough from that perspective. But when you're looking for players, and if any reporter, including me, falls into the trap that you've got to name some offensive players who look pretty good. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the guys who's made a few plays. Another guy who's looked pretty good among the receivers, I think Dayton Wade has looked pretty good. And that's been kind of cool.
I know we're going to save our potential cut candidates for the next episode, but Tylan Wallace is a bubble guy to me. I don't know if they're going to use two returners on kickoffs, but if not, it's a little bit redundant, and I could see Wade, with more team control, still in that spot.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually, to me, in terms of being that way. I think Wade is also a replacement potentially for Deontay Hardy if they were to become unsatisfied with him. So it really does make sense in some ways that Wade would make the team, or at least be a top of the practice squad guy that they were excited about.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if the Ravens found a UDFA receiver for once?
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. And also it'd be cool if we weren't just jumping on yet another guy who in the preseason is a wide receiver darling. Cause I hate doing that. I really hate doing that.
A tradition unlike any other, right?
They're not having any joint practices this season. I think people may be aware of that, maybe not. The big opportunity was against the Eagles prior to this very first preseason game, and they're not doing it. I don't know what their reasoning was, whether it was a case of the Commanders' practices were too physical, too chippy, which they were, or it's just a matter of they didn't really, for timing purposes, it didn't really work out with their schedule or whatever it might have been. But the Eagles would have made the most sense since they're close.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought we saw a report months ago that they were going to deal with the Eagles, and I guess that was a false report. But there's certainly benefits to joint practices. There's a lot more contact in joint practices than ordinary practice. But it's also good to go into the season healthy and save your tricks of the trade, so to speak, for the season.
Let me address that just a second, because the health of the Ravens so far has been really good in terms of what's happened at camp. We've had just a couple of guys look like they walked the sidelines and then come right back. Ben Cleveland kind of was hobbling for a second. He came right back in, so that was good. We had the one guy who's been absent for four straight practices now is Evandy Rigby. And he is a guy I really wanted to see if he could be a backup Mike linebacker for this team, because he's got the size at about 239 pounds to do it. Also could have been a good special teamer. I'm afraid his chance is kind of slipping away with missing practice. And we have not been given a reason yet as to why that's occurred. So we don't know what the injury might be.
I've not heard either, even in back channels. So, but knock on wood, second year with the new strength and conditioning program, maybe it'll pay some dividends.
There you go. So let me turn it on you and say, what do you think the Ravens could still acquire at this point in terms of, where the team is, who might they still be looking for?
You know, I think they would add a quality offensive lineman if there was one available. I'm just not sure there's one available. We touched on it last week. There's basically two guards. One is 36 years old, I believe, and the other tore his ACL in December. So not a whole lot on the offensive line. I do think one place, even though it's a crowded room, and even though Malik Ham is making a case to stick around, would be edge rusher, because with Isaac on the shelf and Ojabo unknown and Van Noy potentially in a position to regress a little bit, and DaCosta's penchant for adding veteran edge rushers, bull rushers, that would probably be the place.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a good possibility. And they do have – Ojabo's back early in camp, which was, by the way, also one of the really nice things. But the other thing that the Ravens do is stagger their roster so that they have returning players at midseason, both via the IRDTR usage and the extra roster spots created by the handshake crew, but also by the use of PUP, for example. Mm-hmm. And Adisa Isaac be on NFI. I don't know how serious this hamstring thing is, or if that's the only thing wrong with him, frankly, because we don't get a.
It's a long time for a hamstring. It's a long time for a hamstring. It really is.
It you know, we baseball hamstrings can keep you out a while, in particular if you have torn it worse than they're willing to admit. So it may be a situation like that. It may be a situation where they're unsure he's going to be able to play in his rookie year, or it may be a case of not passing a conditioning test. Got a little hurt doing it, and he's not ready to pass the conditioning test, and they just want to wait and see, you know, how long it'll take. I don't know if they have the ability to put him on PUP as long as he hasn't practiced, but that may be also something they're thinking about preserving the option on, so that he could be another guy who comes back at midseason. And it is really nice to have staggered replacements that come in. Last year, they didn't, you know, they had them available, and they didn't even end up using them with two of their IRDTR spots got activated to practice, but then didn't get activated to the 53 and reverted to IR for the year. So
who was the other one? Ham and who else?
Was it possibly Ardarius Washington? Was he the one? Or no, maybe not. Maybe it was somebody
could
else.
No, he could have been. And I don't think they even activated Bowser at all. He was just on the shelf.
NFI the whole year. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So one other thing I want to talk about before we cut out here, and we're going pretty good on time here. So is the Orioles trade deadline is coming up. They just won today a very frustrating but wonderfully ugly win against the Marlins, giving up a 6-run lead, three of that in the ninth inning, another blown save, and then coming back to win in the 10th inning with some good play, a clutch hit. Despite getting two men out on the bases for the final two outs of the ninth inning on the same play.
I missed it. I'm glad I did.
Yes. They had a runner. Mullins was thrown out at home, and then Mowdy was thrown out trying to advance on the back end of that to second base. So he got the big hit to drive in the go-ahead
the winner.
Anyway. Yep. Yeah. So a lot of talk has been made about the Orioles acquiring pitching help. And in particular, the name that keeps coming up is Detroit's ace, Tarek Skubal, a guy who has about the most trade value of anybody in that might be traded in Major League Baseball. He's $106 million of surplus value, according to baseball trade values. And by comparison, and this is why I don't think a trade is possible with the Orioles, Jackson Holliday's trade value right now is $80 million. I don't see them giving up Jackson Holliday or Jackson Holliday and change, or even a sniff of Jackson Holliday for Tarek Skubal, even though Skubal is legitimately a Cy Young level pitcher with 2.5 years of team control.
Sure. I'm intrigued by Skubal. First of all, let me say I'm not as well versed in baseball general manager, as far as team control and arbitration, but I certainly watch the team and I'm privy to the prospects. Holiday, I think, is a judgment call. I saw Ryan Ripken, I believe, has a new show, and he had, was it Duquette or one of the former Orioles GMs on, and they said it depends on your view of Holiday. Do you believe Holiday is the next, a Henderson-level player or, a Mateo-level player, potentially? I think the one concern about Skubal is that he's approaching or very close to his innings max. in previous years.
That's definitely an issue for Garrett Crochet. I have not heard that for Scooball, who's been around the league for a few years and has been amassing some significant inning totals already. But you might be right. I can't say I'm totally plugged into that. Crochet, it's mentioned every time his name comes up, is that he's approaching an innings limit, and then, you know, why would you trade for this guy? Here's my issue with trading for Scooball. I think there's three problems with it. The first is that I think the AAA and AA discounts for hitters are too great on baseball trade value, that you really can tell more about what a player is going to do based on his age and his level of play at AAA or AA even, for Samuel Basayo, for example, than that system gives you credit for. So I think the Orioles are getting value shaved from Holiday, Mayo, Basayo, Kerstad even, whoever they might consider trading in that group. The second is you're acquiring a pitcher with 2.5 years of team control, and you're paying, I think, full value for that team control, where the Orioles already have had a huge problem with losing entire seasons for pitchers with injury. That's not, yes. You don't have the same risk with a position player.
That seems very prevalent now, the UCLs and the Tommy Johns, with the spin rates and the, you know, everything else. It seems like more pitchers are becoming injured. To me, they always say pitching wins in the playoffs. And I don't think either starting pitching or the relief pitching on the team as presently constructed, with Bradish done and probably gone most of next year too, et cetera. I don't know if they can win unless the bats really, really carry them. You have your big two at the top, but Kramer as your third guy, I'm not sure if that's going to get it done.
I mean, it's not that I don't disagree with you, but I'd throw in the next point, which is, are they going to get enough with trading away, let's even say, a moderate number of prospects? Because let's say they're willing to trade away one of their big three and three of their other lesser prospects, and they have a fair number of them as well. But if they gave away four of their top 10 to try and improve the team this year, are they going to really improve their chance to win the World Series by enough, given how weak this team has looked the last month or so, and particularly in all areas of pitching, but also in some ways on offense? I think the answers are internal to the system on offense. I think you bring up Mayo and Holiday, you stick them in the lineup, and you make it work, and you'd be fine. You get rid of some of the lesser bats. Mullins obviously struggled a lot this year. Hayes is hitting okay, but I'm not really excited about him as a player. I am now excited about keeping Santander on the team for the rest of this year, at least. Yes. I wasn't earlier. but so, Mateo, yeah.
I'll just take the other side just for conversation's sake, and I don't have a dog in this race. But Santander and Burns are impending free agents. Mm-hmm. You do have a log jam at some of the infield positions. And, you know, the Gunnar Adley, and I put Westberg in that core. I think he's the third amigo. Personally, I really like the way he plays the game. They're going to be long-term core, but one way or another, you're going to need pitching to win that ring.
I'm with you on that, and I think you're going to add a couple more core players. I think all three of the guys they have at double and triple A who I've labeled as untouchable are core players. I think Kerstad could be a core player. The reason I'm okay trading Kerstad is that he's 25, and if you're looking to get two relief pitchers for Kerstad, I might be okay doing that. But I'm really not cool basically trading away the entire prospect top 10 to try and get Scooball and maybe two relievers and win it this year. I think the Ravens the Orioles will get really haircut too significantly in terms of value.
I think part of the problem is they have so many great prospects that the other teams see that and drive a harder bargain than they would with other teams.
You know what? That's fair, but the way that Elias would need to play that then is to say, okay, what are the Yankees offering you in exchange for Tarek Skubal? And if they're offering like Jason Dominguez or whatever their top prospect is, and that's the guy, and Jason, you know, he's you know, the 30th best prospect in all of baseball, I'd say, well, look,
right.
I don't know why you wouldn't accept just, you know, so-and-so or, you know, Norby and Stowers and Kerstad together if you'd accept Jason Dominguez, because he, you know, just no way you could think that prospect package is truly better. So I think he's got to play off what the other teams are offering, as opposed to what they have, which is if he really wants to get value.
Yeah, and I trust him to do that. I think he's a sharp guy. But that's a good point, because if the Yankees said, here are our two best prospects, but their two best are the 30th best and the 100th best, and the Orioles, you know, fourth best and sixth best are still higher rated, then, you know, you take the better deal. So untouchable, I agree with you on Mayo, and apparently he's had five or six consecutive starts at first base now. So they're looking like they're earmarking him for first base now. Basayo and Holiday, how would you tier those three, or do you have an opinion?
They're all so far ahead of everybody else that I would say they're untouchable above them. Mayo, big right-handed bat. In a lot of ways, the lineup needs it very badly, along with, you know, Norby's play, frankly, for that matter. Norby homered again today, for those that don't know. Yeah, Holiday is the on-base percentage guy the team desperately needs. So that's why he's not a Mateo guy. I kind of laughed earlier and said it. I mean, he might not be the defender Mateo is. He almost certainly is not. But what he can be is the leadoff hitter the Orioles desperately need. He'd be the new Don Buford for this team, a guy who gets on base a ton, you know, has some speed, some power, does a lot of things well. And maybe you're a little bit dissatisfied with his glove, which is also something that people had with Buford. And Basayo would basically get rid of the whole James McCann situation. You'd have two great catchers splitting time, and also who are great hitters, either can DH, and they can alternate days at catcher, as far as I'm concerned. You got one as a left-handed bat and one's a switch. I mean, that's a great situation to have in our ballpark. Basayo has a terrific arm. That's not Adley's big thing, but Adley's a great pitch framer and pitcher handler. So, you know, you'd hope you get that out of him. But I wouldn't let any of those guys go. Those three, I'd say no, no matter what. I don't think there's a single pitcher I'd accept. Now, if there's a prospect package that included Skuball Plus, then I'll reconsider. But otherwise, I'm a no on trading any of those three.
You talked me into it. I think I'd be more okay with taking a package of your fourth, sixth, and seventh, or eighth, and there's a long list of guys, and I wouldn't mind parting with several of them for a real top of the rotation starter. But those three, I agree with you, this should be untouchable.
All right, Voss, always a pleasure to do this show with you. Tell folks where they can read your work or talk football with you online.
Yeah, sure. I write a daily Ravens news article at Baltimore Beatdown, BaltimoreBeatdown.com, and I am on Twitter at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown. Love talking roster management and projections and what position and should this player be penciled in and all that sort of thing. So shoot me a message, tag me in.
All right. And in terms of your restaurant, give us the website again that they can find out when it's opening, where it is. I know it's just out there on 140, just a little past the Blue Moon restaurant, as I understand.
Correct. Right across the line between Baltimore County and Carroll County. We are at this point aiming for a September grand reopening, and we have all of our permits in line, and we are doing heavy construction as we speak. So it's going to be called Fiammata. The Twitter handle is at the Fiammata, Fiammata.
All right. Outstanding. Italian food as designed and put together by a Greek guy. So you told me that's a very common.
You'd be surprised how many Greek guys sell Italian food.
Outstanding. Other folks out there who want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'm open to a wide variety of ideas. We're past the point where we could do concerns podcasts. In fact, I'm having trouble getting all those aired in a timely fashion. So I appreciate you guys holding up for that. I could still do a recollections if anyone wants to do that. But hit me up if you have an idea that's different even from that. And I would love to hear from you. In particular, the time between the last preseason game and the first regular season game is a good opportunity to get some shows done. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.